If you would, turn with me to Zechariah. Zechariah chapter 1. You know, I do apologize for easing into Zechariah at a pace probably a little slower than I'd anticipated, but it's just, you know, tackling these visions one on top of another, you just hate to rush through them. And so today we're really only going to cover the second vision. It's not many verses. But it's possible we could pick up the pace next week. I think next week has chapter 2. The third is a whole third vision. The fourth vision is covered all in chapter 3. So maybe we'll start knocking these things on down a little bit better. But if you remember 2 weeks back in the book of Zechariah, he had his first vision. And in the first vision, he saw a man riding on a red horse. And that man riding on a red horse was the angel of the Lord. And the angel of the Lord was standing among the myrtle trees. And the myrtle trees, we came to the conclusion, represented Israel. And so the angel of the Lord was standing among the myrtle trees. He was standing with Israel in their darkest days. He was standing with Israel in their lowest points in their history. And he was sending these riders to report, you know, to go and patrol the earth, go throughout the whole earth patrolling. And they report back to him. And the report comes back that the nations are at ease. You know, all the nations are at rest. And if you remember, that really meant, it didn't mean that they were at peace. It really meant that they had no concern for the Jewish people. They were indifferent towards the temple. You know, they could care less if the temple got built or not. You know, and they had total disregard for Jerusalem. You know, they were at ease. They were completely indifferent on the state of the Jewish people. All the while, they were at ease. They didn't care. All the while, they were at ease. And then you have the angel of the Lord crying out, "Oh, how long, O Lord? How long, O Lord?" And then the answer comes that I am exceedingly jealous for Jerusalem and Zion. I'm exceedingly angry with the nations that are at ease. For while I was a little angry, they furthered the disaster. These are what Zechariah calls words of comfort. You know, and many people you read after, they say the theme of this book is comfort. You know, delivered by a man named Zechariah, whose name means God remembers. So, taking that, God remembers and God comforts is pretty much the theme of this book, is what many seem to imply. But here he said he's exceedingly angry. You know, earlier he said he was angry with their fathers who did not heed or did not pay attention to me. He said that back in verse 4, that he was angry with their fathers. And look what he did to Jerusalem. You know, he tossed them into captivity, for lack of better words, and the place was completely destroyed, and they were treated horribly for 70 years, and he was angry with them. But these, he is exceedingly angry. Sounds worse, doesn't it? And just imagine what he does to Babylon. Imagine what he does to Medo-Persia. Completely destroys these people. You know, with Jerusalem or with the Jewish people, he seems to chasten them. But he doesn't destroy them. He chastens them out of love. He doesn't do so with these pagan nations. And he's angry with them for the way they've done his people. Because he was angry with them for a little while, but they furthered the disaster. They took it too far. You know, and all you got to do is look back at the Holocaust and see that many take it too far with their hatred of the Jewish nation. There was no place for that. But as we ease into this vision, the second vision here, it says in verse 18, I'll read 18 through 21, or I'll read the rest of the chapter. And I lifted up my eyes and saw, behold, four horns. And I said to the angel who talked with me, "What are these?" And he said to me, "These are the horns that have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem." Then the Lord showed me four craftsmen. And I said, "What are these coming to do?" And he said, "These are the horns that scattered Judah, so that no one raised his head. And these have come to terrify them, to cast down the horns of the nation who lifted up their horns against the land of Judah to scatter it." So, I think these visions are kind of building on top of one another. And it, the first vision was words of comfort that I'm angry or I'm jealous for Jerusalem. I'm zealous. I have a passion for Jerusalem. That word could be translated that way. And I'm angry with the nations that are at ease. And so this vision seems to build off of that. This is what the nations that are at ease are, the nations are the four horns. And the four craftsmen are the ones who came to terrify or to cast down the horns of the nations. They seem to build off that first vision. And you'll see the latter part of this first vision, if you'll follow with me, verse 16 says, I have returned to Jerusalem with mercy, and my house shall be built in it, declares the Lord of hosts, and the measuring line shall be stretched out over Jerusalem. Well, look at the second vision, chapter 2, the third vision. It says, and I lifted up my eyes, and I saw a man with a measuring line in his hand. And he said, then I said, where are you going to measure Jerusalem? To see what its width and what its length. So I think these visions kind of build off of one another, if that makes any sense. That's kind of the way I see it progressing. I may change my mind as we study through it. So this, I think, is building off of the Lord being jealous. The Lord being zealous or having a passion for Jerusalem and being angry with the nations that are at ease. The nations that seemingly took it too far. They took their treatment of the Jewish people too far. And it reminded me of Psalms 2, verse 1 says, why do the nations rage? Or why do they conspire? And the peoples plot in vain. The kings of the earth, they set themselves against the rulers and take counsel together. You know, they take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. They want to get out from under God. Similar to in Jesus' day, we will not have this man reign over us. Same cry. But it says in verse 4, but he who sits in the heavens laughs. And I love that verse. You know, they're planning and plotting and all this, and he's just sitting in heaven laughing. God's controlling history. He's controlling the future. He's through this whole book. And just like that song we sang, if God is for us, then who can stand against us? I mean, I think this is, God is for Israel. He's exceedingly jealous for them. So who could be against them? But we go on, it says, I lifted up my eyes and saw. Now, I lifted up my eyes and saw, to me, it just lets us know that we're transitioning into another vision. You know, that way I think it kind of lets us know that this is a separate vision. You see the same thing in chapter 2, verse 1. And I lifted up my eyes and saw. Maybe that's just an indication that we've moved on from the first vision to the second, to the third. He said he lifted up his eyes and saw. And he saw four horns. Four horns. These horns most likely represent strength. They represent power. All through the Bible, that's what the horns refer to. And it's a lot of people I read after say it's not too far-fetched to say that we even do that some today. When we go hunting, what do? We kill a deer. What's the first thing you do when you kill a deer? Cut off his horns. Hang him on the wall. Showing that you have power over that deer, you know. And if you were just going to eat the deer, you wouldn't care if it had any horns. But you always shoot and gun for the ones with the biggest horns. In a way to show our power over it. It's just the way it is. You know, sometimes kings are referred to as horns. Or horns represent kings, as in singular. And you get that in Daniel chapter 8, verse 5. It says, and the great horn between his eyes is the first king. It's a man by the name of Alexander the Great. That's who that verse is referencing. So sometimes a horn can represent a man, like it does with the little horn that wages war, the Antichrist. You know, he's considered a horn in Revelations. Well, it also, sometimes the horn can represent kingdoms or nations. So you get that in Jeremiah 48. It says the horn of Moab is cut off. and his arm is broken, declares the Lord. So the Lord had cut off the horn of Moab, had removed this power, his strength, his influence. You see this in Lamentations. It said, he has in his fierce anger cut off the horn of Israel. This is Jeremiah. Jeremiah's crying out that they're going into captivity in Lamentations, that the Lord has removed their horn. The Lord has broken off their horn. You know, some other translations of that word is the might of Israel. He has cut down the fierce anger, all the might of Israel, all the strength of Israel. The New American Standard translates it that way. So translators seem to interchange the word horn with might and strength. So when he says he looked up and he saw these four horns, these are four kingdoms that we're going to read about in just a minute. And it says they scattered. These are the horns that have scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. And the word for scattered in English reads as if it's past tense. But in the Hebrew, it's in the, what we call the present tense. And it literally reads this way. These are the horns which have scattered, which are scattering, and will scatter Jerusalem, Judah, or Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. These are the horns that have scattered, are scattering, and will scatter. It means a completed action. Well, anyway, these horns, and it refers to the number four. I saw four horns. Now, the number four, some people take it to mean it's symbolic. It's symbolic of the whole world, the four winds, the four corners of the earth, the four points on a compass, you know, north, south, east, and west, the whole world. And that four symbolizes a worldwide, universal type of persecution. Many take it that way. Option two would say they're referring to four specific kingdoms, and that's the camp I land in. And I hope I can defend that position here shortly. But you need to remember, as we're studying through this, we're fixing to turn to Daniel, that Daniel was written and prophesying during the captivity. Daniel was still alive when the Medo-Persians had conquered Babylon, right? Okay, and right when the Medo-Persians conquered Babylon, they released, you know, all the Jews. So there's some Jews in Jerusalem now while Daniel's still alive in Babylon. So these men are really alive or are really close to being prophesying about the same time. It's hard to really date these things, but some dates I read has the Daniel's prophecy of the four beasts and the ram and the he-goat, that prophecy being only about 30 years before this. So they're really prophesying about the same time. Real similar. So let's, if you would, turn to Daniel. We'll start in chapter 2. And we'll try to get down to the four horns, who I think these four horns are referring to. These four horns are the nations that have scattered Jerusalem. We do know that. So let's try to get into these horns. In chapter 2 of Daniel, we have Nebuchadnezzar's dream. You know, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and either he can't remember the dream, which some think, or he chooses not to tell the wise men the dream, but yet still demands the interpretation thereof. You know, you tell me my dream and you tell me what it means. And they basically are saying, you're nuts. But they say it a little more delicate than that. They cherish your life a little too much. You see that in chapter 2, verse 10. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand. For no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. They were partly right. Only God could show them this. And God's going to, through Daniel. God's going to reveal this dream to them and tell them exactly what it means. Well, Daniel, you know, asks for some time, prays with his, some of his companions, and he comes up and he goes to Nebuchadnezzar and he says, You saw, in verse 31, you saw, O king, a great image. This image, mighty and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. The head of this image was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. And as you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. So he defined this image he saw. He told him exactly what you saw. And then he tells him what it is. In my book, you turn the page, it's over in verse 38. He says, at the end of verse 38, you are the head of gold. So we know right away that Nebuchadnezzar is the head of gold. No way around that. And it says in verse 39, another kingdom inferior to you shall rise after you, and yet a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And there shall be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, because the iron breaks to pieces and shatters all things. And like iron that crushes, it shall break and crush all these. So you see, these are kingdoms. And the first kingdom is Babylon. The head is you. You are the head of gold. So Daniel's prophecy was definitely about four kingdoms, not just four generic north, south, east, west, the four winds. His prophecy was four kingdoms. And he also gets another prophecy, Daniel does. It's in chapter 7. Chapter 7 of Daniel. We'll start in verse 3. And four great beasts came out of the sea, different one from another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then I looked, and its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the man, in the mind of a man, was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear, was raised up on one side. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, arise, devour much flesh. After this, I looked, and behold, another like a leopard with 4 wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. And after this, I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth that devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So here he's given basically another vision, but in this one, it's a vision of 4 beasts. And the 4 beasts pretty much represent the same thing. They represent Babylon. They represent Medo-Persia. They represent Greece. And most people think the 4th represents Rome. Now, if you're reading through this, well, just real quick, look at verse 17 in chapter 7. It says, these 4 great beasts are 4 kings who shall rise out of the earth. No doubt that these 4 beasts represent 4 kings or 4 kingdoms. That shall arise. They're not generic, they're specific. And you know, you may hear people as they teach through this, they'll try to tell you who these kingdoms represent, like I just did. You know, but we know for a fact that the head of gold was Babylon. That's already been told. But I'm sitting here telling you that the other two are Medo-Persia and Greece. So let's read on and see if we can get that. Daniel has another vision. Chapter 8. Like I said, this is all going on about the same time. So this is not like we're reading things that are 1,000 years apart. These may have even been contemporaries. Daniel was an old man, and that's most likely why he stayed in Babylon. Zechariah was a young man, and his father was a priest, so it's highly likely that he knew Daniel. Then we go on in chapter 8, verse 3. I raised up my eyes and saw, and behold, a ram standing on the bank of the canal. It had 2 horns. And both horns were high, but one was higher than the other. And the higher one came up last. I saw the ram charged westward and northward and southward. No beast could stand before him, and there was no one who could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased and became great. And as I was considering, behold, a male goat came from the west across the face of the whole earth without touching the ground. And the goat had a conspicuous horn between his eyes. He came to the ram with the two horns, which I had seen standing on the bank of the canal, and he ran at him in his great powerful wrath. I saw him come close to the ram, and he was enraged against him and struck the ram and broke his two horns, and the ram had no power to stand before him, but he cast him to the ground before and trampled on him. And there was no one who could rescue the ram from his power. Then the goat became exceedingly great. But when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And instead of it, there came up four conspicuous horns toward the four winds of heaven. Now, if you remember chapter 7, I'm fixing to hopefully answer some questions here. Chapter 7, it talked about he saw a bird. The second beast was like a bird. You know, it was raised up on one side, like it had one paw raised above another is what many think. And most think that refers to Media Persia. And the Persian Empire was stronger than the Medes. The same thing you have here. You have, you know, with two horns, you know, and one horn is higher than the other one, representing Medo-Persia. You have the goat, the way they attacked, you know, they just moved across the land so fast, destroying everything in its path. And that's what he's talking about, where he says he came across the face of the ground without ever touching the ground. But I'm sitting here telling you that the second and the third beast are Medo-Persia and Greece. And, you know, as I'm sitting there, how do we know this? If you look in verse 20, chapter 8, verse 20 of Daniel, as for the ram that you saw with the two horns, these are the kings of the Media and Persia. No doubt now who the second king is talking about. No doubt. Then we get, and the goat is the king of Greece. And the great horn between its eyes is the first king. And for the horn that was broken, in place of which four others arose, four kingdoms shall arise from his nation, but not with his power. So Daniel foretold all this beforehand. You know, Greece hadn't even come onto the scene yet in this time. Medo-Persia was here, but he's already foretold who's next. And so when people tell you the four kingdoms, and they tell you it's Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, we have scripture that proves it. So these are definitely three of the four horns, three of the four beasts, three of the four images that Nebuchadnezzar saw are Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece. In Greece, here it says, the great horn between his eyes is the first king, Alexander the Great. The horn was broken off. He didn't have an heir really to leave his kingdom to, so he divided his kingdom amongst like four generals. And none of them were ever as strong as it was when it was united. So that's why I tend to believe the four horns are referring to four specific kingdoms. I guess that's a long answer. I should have just said, this is what it is, but I want you to understand why. And, you know, we're not alone. Kimchi, which is a Jewish rabbi in the 12th century, said that the proper interpretation of this was four monarchies, as he called it. You have the Babylonian monarchy, the Persian monarchy, and the Grecian monarchy. Now, he never named the fourth one. I don't know why, but he didn't. And this is a Jewish rabbi. That was his interpretation of the four horns, was the three we just named and one to go. So if Daniel's vision is meant to be understood as four definite kingdoms, it only seems reasonable to interpret Zechariah's prophecy the same way. Like I said, they're prophesying roughly the same time as four definite kingdoms. And you may be wondering, if you're like me, I pray I can make this point, why would they start with Babylon? You know, why not with Egypt? You know, Egypt ruled over Israel for some 400 years, and they did it cruelly. But it's beginning with Nebuchadnezzar, Judah's captivity under Nebuchadnezzar, the times of the Gentile begins. And the times of the Gentile runs all the way until what we call the second coming of Christ. And during all that time, Jerusalem is trodden down, and even today, is still not liberated. We get this. Jesus says this in Luke 21. He said, Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. That's the words of Christ. And it's because Judaism as a whole rejected their Messiah. You know, we even studied in Romans 11. Paul says, I do not want you to be unaware, my brethren, of this mystery. A partial hardening has come upon Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come. So right now, Israel has rejected their Messiah as a nation. They seemingly have rejected their Messiah, and we're living in what is called the times of the Gentiles. And they have a partial hardening until this time is over with. And when this is over with, the Lord's going to turn back to Israel. And he's going to accomplish these things we see here in Zechariah. These promises will be fulfilled. We just read about in the first vision. So, the Babylonian kingdom would be the first horn in both Daniel's and Zechariah's prophecy. The first beast, the head of gold. The first beast, the first horn, all refer to Babylon. And Zechariah, his audience, and he would have understood that, you know, they saw the transition from Babylon to Medo-Persia. And then he goes on, he says, then the Lord showed me four craftsmen. And I said, what are these coming to do? So, what are these coming to do, referring to the craftsmen? And the way it's answered, he just really repeats the purpose of the horns to start with. These are the horns that scattered Judah, so that no one raised his head. And these, referring to the craftsmen, and these have come to terrify them, referring to the horns, to cast down the horns of the nations who lifted up their horns against the land of Judah to scatter it. So, it's interesting here that the Septuagint adds, and have broken Israel, where it says they have scattered Israel. They lifted up their horns against the land of Judah to scatter it and have broken Israel. But you see, they have scattered, they are scattering, and they will continue to scatter Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. And it says they have lifted up. These horns have lifted up. You know, the last part of that verse, they have lifted up their horns against the land of Judah. They have increased in power. They have rose up in domineering fashion to scatter. They furthered the disaster, as we read about in the first vision. They lifted up their horns in pride. They lifted up their horns in arrogance. Even in Daniel 4, what did Nebuchadnezzar say? The king spoke, saying, is not this great Babylon that I have built for royal dwelling of my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? That's what he's talking about, I think, when he says they've lifted up their horns. They lifted up their horns and they've scattered. They've completely scattered Israel. And then he goes on, but who are these? That's the answer. These are those who came to terrify and to cast down the horns. Who are the craftsmen? Who are the hammerers? I think some translations have hammerers there, by the way. I think who was the one who terrified and cast down Babylon? Medo-Persia. Who was the one who terrified and cast down Medo-Persia? Greece. Who was the one who terrified and cast down Greece? Rome. Who is the one who will smash Rome? The Lord Jesus Christ. That's the answer. That's back in Daniel when he said the stone cut out of the mountain without hands is a reference to his virgin birth. And that's what he said, Daniel 2:34. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on his feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Stone cut without hands definitely refers to his virgin birth. Nobody made him. Nobody formed him. He always was. You know, Colossians, we've been memorizing it. He was before all things. He's eternal God in human form. He is the image of the invisible God. This is Jesus Christ. He's a stone cut out of a mountain without hands. And it's interesting that even Jewish teaching today teach that the fourth craftsman here, the fourth craftsman that's going to destroy this fourth horn, is the Messiah. So we kind of agree. We just don't agree with who he is, you know. And it's interesting, too, that the word craftsman in some translation is referred to as a carpenter. You know, if you read, I think, the New King James, and the King James called this carpenter. There were four carpenters. And craftsmen really mean someone that works with wood, with metal, with iron, with rock, with stone. It could be just a craftsman. Carpenters pretty much limit that to wood, and I think that's why the translator shifted over to craftsmen instead of carpenters. But if you read it as if it's a carpenter, and they think the last fourth carpenter would be the Messiah, it just made me think of Mark 6, where they said, is this not the carpenter, when they were referring to Jesus? You know, out of all occupations he could have came, he came as a carpenter, son of a carpenter. You know, so he could be, he's exactly right. This carpenter, the fourth craftsman, will destroy the fourth horn and will set up his kingdom and will reign. So be comforted, Israel, because for every nation that rises against you, there's going to be a hammer to crush that nation. That's what he's saying. God has been in control. God is in control. God will be in control in the future. These are the words of comfort that Zechariah is trying to pass along to the Jews who are in Jerusalem, you know, persecuted at this time. Seemingly abandoned, as it seems, you know. Their countrymen is back in Babylon, and they're here alone and being persecuted, and it just seems like things are kind of working against them. Zechariah is trying to give them comfort. Look, God has not forgotten you, and God is exceedingly jealous for you. He's angry with the nations who are doing this to you. But the thing that I kept struggling with and trying to get answers on is, if you're Zechariah's audience, and he comes to you and he gives you this vision that he received, and you're really wanting things to get better, naturally, and you find out we're just on the second horn. We're not even halfway through this thing. You know, it's got to be a little bit discouraging, you know, but it's not. These guys took comfort in the fact that God was going to deliver them. You know, it reminded me of Romans 4:19. I read this. It's talking about Abraham. It said, he did not weaken. He did not waver in faith when he considered his own body, which was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old. And when he considered the barrenness of Sarah's womb, his wife's womb, she was about 90, he was 100. He never wavered in faith. No unbelief made him waver concerning the promise of God. But he grew strong in his faith, and he gave the glory to God, fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. That is why his faith was counted to him as righteousness. That's Romans 4:19-22. His faith grew in strength. He was fully convinced that God was able to do what he has promised. And so, in other words, one of the characteristics of a righteous person, you know, the righteous shall live by faith, the just shall live by faith. One of the characteristics of that is that we trust in God and we trust in his promises. Because righteous people trust the Lord. They continue to believe in him even when he seems slow to act. Even when it seems impossible, they still trust God. They don't just believe God. They believe in God. You know? They believe the things he says. They believe the words that are coming out of his mouth. Like Jesus, you know, my Father's house has many rooms. I go and prepare a place for you. You know, and I will come back to receive you. If it wasn't so, I wouldn't have told you. You can count on his word. He's coming back. That's, you know, there's no doubt about it. He's coming back, and he's also has these four craftsmen that's under his control and his authority to tame or to break off the horns of these people who have taken, or these nations who have taken their treatment of Israel too far and have angered him in doing so. But Hebrews 11 also is speaking of the hall of faith we read from time to time. And it talks about all these have died in faith, not receiving the things promised, but having seen them from afar. So these men are the same way. They died not receiving the things that were promised. But they could see them from afar, and they had faith that God would deliver. God would uphold His end of the promise. So I pray that you do understand where these four horns are. You know, I didn't want to just get up here and tell you who the four horns were. I want to kind of try to help you understand as to why I thought the four horns were four definite kingdoms, and we can pinpoint three of them. You can argue about the fourth one. You know, I wouldn't argue about it, but we know for a fact on the three of the four horns who he was referring to. And we know who the fourth craftsman is that's coming to put down the fourth horn. We just don't know when. But we can have faith and trust that it's going to happen, and look forward to it. If you would please stand.